Hey, everybody. Welcome to Spin is a Four-Letter Word, the Maroon PR podcast, all things marketing and PR, and we're a newest episode of Having a Beer With. Today, we're having a beer with our good friend, Bill Ripken of MLB Network, former Oriole. Bill, thank you so much for being here today. Spin is a four-letter word. And Jen Renahan, our esteemed COO, joining us as always. Hello, Jen. Speaking to the mic.
Hello.
Spin is a four-letter word. Yes.
So, listen, before we get started, thanks. Big shout-out to John Minidakis, Tony Minidakis, and Jimmy's Famous Seafood for hosting us today. Not only hosting us, just giving us these beautiful crabs, always being welcoming and friendly. There's a reason people love Jimmy's Seafood, and it's known all across the country. It's because they do so many things right. They give back to the community. They're active. They make great freaking food, and we're very grateful to them.
Hey, can I do two numbers of housekeeping? One, no collar. Because when you're eating crabs and having beers, you should be in a T-shirt. Sorry about that. Two, about Jimmy's. Yes, we get the seafood. Sleeper pick. I did it last year. Thanksgiving. Right out of this place.
Wow.
That's right. Think about it.
I will think about it because we don't go back to Jersey on Thanksgiving anymore because of the traffic and the dog and whatnot. So Thanksgiving might have to happen. Thank you, Bill Ripken. So listen, let's get started by eating these crabs and why do we eat crabs and how do we eat crabs. My first time eating crabs was a month or two living in Maryland. It was my birthday and we went to a place called the Crack Pot in Towson. I don't even know if it's still there. When we went there, we walked in, and they said, are you here for crabs or dinner? Carolyn and I from Jersey are looking at each other like, well, we want crabs for dinner. The woman said, first time? We said, yeah. She said, sit down. She sat with us, and she showed us how to clean and eat a crab. And if she didn't do that, we wouldn't be hooked on these suckers like we have been for the last 30 years. So thanks to that woman who I don't remember at the Crack Pot. But Ripper, Jen was saying before we came on that, it does seem everybody has a different technique, even within your family.
Correct.
I know your brother pulls off legs and whatnot. What's your technique
and
why?
Let's go first and foremost. Once you grab the dude to begin with, this is called the apron. So get in there with the knife, get the apron out of there. Once you get the apron off, we're going to go ahead and split him open. Get that shell off of there, get out of here because I don't want anything to do with it. Now, these things are the lungs. And this is some mustard and some innards. Some people like the innards and mustard. Those people are just nasty. Sorry,
mustard,
Jen.
Mustard, not the innards. Nasty. The mustard.
So we're going to scrape this, clean out the innards right there, the intestines and all the nasty stuff that Jen likes. Lungs gone. Once we get them looking like that, I leave legs on. I like the legs staying on my thing.
Very Ripken-esque.
We're just going to break this thing in half. Oh. Once we get them like this, we can give them a little bit of a deep tissue massage, if you will. And we get rid of this one piece of shell here, and we should be able to get a decent amount of crab meat out of these
Boom.
Parts right there
that.
Once
Some
you get in there.
Lollipops.
Some call them lollipops. Not I.
So, Ripper, who taught you your method? Was it Cal Sr.? Was it developed on your own, a little combo of the two?
You know,
how'd this happen?
I think over time, they went with, like, Cal's batting stances. They had a tendency to change over time. I know I went through one phase where I was pulling legs off at will, but I like leaving them on there and getting to them last now. And I've been doing this one for a while. I'm not sure where the formula came from, but if you eat enough of them, I don't think you can eat the exact same way. Sometimes if they feel a little bit lighter than other times, you might want to pull the legs off first because you seem to be able to get more of the lunch meat out, the crab
That's
meat
right.
out to begin with, which is good for lunch.
Does your whole family like them? Candace, all the kids, are they all crab people?
For the most part, I think young Jack is the one that probably could do with or without. But when they are there and if he sees us picking some of them, he'll sit down next to you and maybe steal some of yours.
Yeah.
It's good, but I think for the people that are outside of this state, they don't want to put in the work
That's right.
to get it done. They're a little bit lazier when it comes to that, so they might be the ones that go to the grocery store and get jumbo lump in the container, but it's just not the same. When you got all the Old Bay and all the seasoning on it, and you rub all that in there, it's good.
But that kind of goes to the fact if you've never, as a kid, I couldn't join the crab table until I knew how to pick my crabs. That was our family rule. Mm. But, like, it's a thing. It's a family thing. You sit around the table for hours, you eat. It's not really about, I mean, they're good and they taste good and they're great, but it's about the experience. And if you're not from here and you don't get to do that, coming here and eating at a crab house is like, what?
It's crab cake. We didn't grow up with crabs, and we've come to love them.
Mm-hmm. If you're in Kansas City, you're going to eat the barbecue.
That's right. Yeah.
And you're going to do that. But if you're here, you better do this.
Yes. Yes, and have someone teach you. And I'm lucky enough always to have 12-year big leaguer, Emmy Award-winning broadcaster
all
do
the above.
It. But, hey, we are. Ripper, besides crabs, people in Maryland love the Orioles. The Baltimore Orioles seem to be kind of back, baby.
They're hot right
playing
now.
Playing good. And they got some young guys that I think are really exciting the city. It's good to see people excited by the team again. What's your take on that club?
Well, last year, I thought they did such a good job of surpassing all expectations, I think, from everybody. And I was the first one when the start of the year started. I said, don't be surprised if you hit standstill, status quo, or you take a little bit of step back. Because I've just noticed over the years, once a team does what they did last year, it's hard to necessarily replicate that or duplicate that for whatever reason. After a month into the season or after 40 games into the season now, I've kind of come off that stance. They got some guys that are figuring it out. Adley Rutschman came up to the big leagues last year. And do yourself a favor out there is if you like looking up numbers, look up the numbers of Adley Rutschman. Not Adley Rutschman's numbers per se, but the Orioles' numbers since Adley Rutschman took the field and became a member of the Orioles because they are such a different team than they were before he came up. He's got leadership qualities. Do I annoy some Yankee fans from time to time? Because I actually dare to say, is there some Derek Jeter in there somewhere? Mm-hmm. With Adley Rutschman, you don't necessarily put your finger on it, but something's right when that dude's in the lineup and playing every day. Right. The kid posts. So they've got some guys figuring it out. Jorge Mateo is coming into his own. I think he's starting to figure his game out. Cedric Mullins is bouncing back from his 30-30 year of a couple years ago to the little bit of a rough patch he had last year, and he's playing well. You got some dudes on the bump. That can bring it. You got guys at the back end of the bullpen that can bring it. So they have all the pieces right there. It's a matter now of them staying, I guess, healthy enough and being able to maintain this through the 162.
It's exciting, and then I'll let Jen chime in here. But talk a little bit, Bill, tell us a little bit about your transition. So we're with Bill Ripken, who everyone remembers Bill as a 12-year big leaguer, longtime Oriole, famous baseball family, but now he's an Emmy Award-winning broadcaster on MLB Network. Bill, you always kind of had that natural gift to convey your thoughts really effectively, give smart insights to things, be funny. When did you think about making that transition into broadcasting from the playing field?
I don't know if I ever thought about it, to tell you the truth. Look, Junior always said I had the gift of gab. And then he also would say that I had the ability to take of what Senior had, where you see some play and you can break it down and then you can explain it in some simple terms. When the network started, I would say go back 3 or 4 years prior to the network starting. Junior was nominated and won whatever, the March of Dimes Man of the Year. And we went up to the Waldorf Hotel in New York City, and I was the one who introduced him as a lunch crowd. Not going to lie, I had a few of these. Get the microphone in front of me at a lunchtime kind of affair. I get to play victim with Junior being the golden boy and everything that rolls around with it. 3 or 4 years after that, when the network started, there was a man who was the number one hire by Major League Baseball to start the network. His name was Tony Petitti. Tony Petitti, at the time of that banquet, prior to the network opening, was in attendance that night in the audience. And at the time, I believe he was with CBS Sports doing all the big Final Fours and events like that. So he's the one who sent word, Bill's got to come up here, and I want to hear what he does.
Wow.
So we started that relationship then, had conversation with him. I think I started out 50 shows in year one. Have been up as much as 115 shows in any given year. And this is the 14th year I've been going up there and doing it. So I think
I've... Never know who's going to be in the audience.
Never know who's going to be in the audience. But I had some A-game that day introducing Junior for the March of Dimes Man of the Year Award. He's Man of the Year. I've never been. But it got me a gig at the network for a long time.
Well, I remember years ago, before MLB Network, the XM Sirius Radio show.
Yes.
That we did it from Ripken Stadium. To this day, I talk about if you're putting cream in your coffee, it has to be caramel colored. You would yell that through the halls.
I yelled it once.
Camel colors.
Yeah, not caramel.
Camel.
Some people have confused the caramel and camel. I think they're similar colors, but I like camel color. I wanted sugar, and I wanted cream, and I wanted camel color. That's my coffee.
But to me, like hearing you in that scenario, I know that. The kind of way the show went is we would find plays for you guys and you would break them down and then you'd talk to managers and different people through the league and whatever. And from that moment, I mean, I could tell like that you had that gift of breaking it down. And so I knew it. I saw it well before.
Well before Tony Petitti did at the March of Dimes thing.
Absolutely.
You know what? It's been fun. You call your spinning is a four-letter word,
yeah.
And your have a beer with podcast. Everything that I've done since playing baseball kind of relates around this type of behavior anyway. Mm-hmm. If we were up in the minor league stadium, we got a group of people that are sitting out there for the Ironbirds. What is there, 20, 25 people around during game days? And it's not dissimilar to the 25 persons that were in your locker room when you played.
Right.
Up at the network at any given time with the various shows going on over the course of the day, there's 25 to 30 people I got to deal with. Mm-hmm. And at all different levels that you deal with. You deal with research, you deal with edit, you deal with the producer, you deal with the coordinating producer, you deal with the makeup artist. But it's all dealing with people. And I think that part of me playing baseball and growing up in a baseball world, that environment hasn't changed for me.
Right.
Now I just don't have to go out there and face, you know, Nolan Ryan, which is a heck of a lot easier while you're sitting here doing this.
So, Bill, it's interesting to me, like, having known you a long time, I think you've always been true to yourself. And, you know, we always try to talk to people about being their true self and playing to their strengths. What was the hardest adjustment for you kind of going in front of the camera? Like, it seems like it happened very naturally, but I'm sure there were certain struggles and things that you had to adapt to.
Let's spin it this way first. The spin is a four-letter word.
Yeah.
It's a four-letter word. True to yourself. Now, Senior never said to be true to yourself, but Senior said worry about yourself. Senior said take care of yourself. And what he meant by that was understand who you were. Don't worry about what that person's doing. Don't worry about what that person's doing. Do what you can, because most of the time it's going to be good enough. Now, in a baseball setting, I think it's pretty easy. Unless you're right now in the game, because I've been using Mike Trout for the last 8 years. Right. Unless you're Mike Trout, you're not going to find anybody better in the game. So you can look all around all you want. Unless you're Shohei Ohtani in today's game, you're going to find somebody that's better than you. You know, so bigger, stronger, faster, all the above, smarter. But if you worry about yourself and you take care of yourself, you'll find that that's going to be good enough most of the time. And Senior didn't lie to me. I think his influence in that way took me as a 17-year-old kid when I graduated high school and went away. That kind of words of wisdom helped me get to the big leagues. I think Senior, with that same mentality, talking to Junior, who was at a better starting point than I ever could have been, Senior's influence on him helped sculpt and mold him into the Hall of Famer and the Iron Man and everything that we see. So it's the same words, worry about yourself, take care of yourself. But if you have different starting points, you know, your job as a coach or your job as a parent or your job as a mentor to take somebody from here to here If you happen to find somebody that has a starting point of here, you take them to the next level. If you find somebody at a low rung, you got to get them up a few rungs, and then everything's going to be better for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. Sorry, go ahead, Jen.
Go ahead.
So, Bill, the one thing that's always found interesting is that, again, going back to staying true to yourself, you've managed to be very successful in your field, this new field of yours in broadcasting, but without doing a lot of the things that other people feel necessary to do, like be on Twitter and be active on social media. And how have you managed to kind of stay away from that? Did you feel pressure to be more active on social media because that's the way of the world now, especially in a high-profile position that you're in?
I'm still going to choose to leave that one alone for a while. I don't know if I've ever been pressured. I've been
encouraged.
Talked to, encouraged, and things like that. But I don't know. To me, it's something that I don't think it necessarily concerns me. Could it benefit me if I did it? Maybe. But I don't think at this point in time that I'm sitting here, I feel a need to actually start that up. It'd be just one more avenue for somebody to tweak my nerves. And I think that I would not be the type of person that would want to handle it too easily. And then you're in a no-win situation. Yeah. So maybe to your original thing about know thyself,
yeah.
I know thyself. And well, I don't think I want to get in there.
Yeah, I think that's tough to say to someone that isn't inherently just wants to be on social media, hey, you need to be on social media. Because you can tell it's not real. You can tell, you can see behind all of that if you're just forcing yourself to take a picture of you doing this and posting it. Like, it's not in your makeup. If you don't want to do it, it's not going to be authentic and it's not going to be good. So I think that's smart. Yeah.
Because I don't think everybody needs to know that when I break open crustaceans at home, how I do it. I think there's a reason for it. I think that there is an awareness out there that is beyond what, you know, I was used to when I grew up. But for me to want to jump in that with 2 feet or jump off the diving board to get into it, I just don't think that it's in my bag.
Hey, Ripper, shifting gears a little bit to media relations. Media is a big part of what we do, obviously. And when you were a player, you were always really good about talking to the press, being available to the press. I think some guys are really good about it, some guys aren't. I dealt with both as a PR director for different teams. What are your thoughts generally now? Because the media has certainly evolved, right? Now you have a wide swath. It's not just the Baltimore Sun and a couple TVs. Now you have bloggers and influencers and all, whole new universe. Like, what? It feels like the athletes today are under a lot more pressure and scrutiny than they were back in the day. What's your take on the whole media landscape?
I don't know from where I sit if they're under more pressure or scrutiny. I think that goes with the territory. What I've seen from the players that you used to deal with in the PR department of any individual sports team, I think more than half of these guys don't think they need somebody like you because they can all do it on their own. And I do see a little bit of a problem with that because I see guys come up to the big leagues. I won't use any other sport. I'll just stick with mine.
Yep.
I see guys come up to the big leagues, and I think they have more of a desire to be a social media star than an all-star.
Right.
And my take on that, and maybe it's an old-school take, and maybe it's the influence in the upbringing of a senior, if you become a great baseball player and you become an all-star, everything else takes care of itself.
Right.
But there are an awful lot of dudes coming up to the big leagues that within their first week in the big leagues and haven't done anything yet that are trying to be a social media star. And some are actually fulfilling that. Yeah. I also think the ones that fulfill it are less likely to fulfill the other side of it. And that's on the baseball side.
Well, I would imagine going towards that's energy away from your primary job, right?
I would agree.
And if you don't have parents and coaches along the way teaching you that, which in today's society, it's a lot of little Jimmy's going to be the next, you know, all-star.
Say Shohei.
So
they do that.
So you have the parents in some cases conflating the kid, right? And then you might not have a coach to say you need to work hard versus minding your Instagram. And then the whole NIL conversation comes in. So the kids that go to college are being taught now, right? You got, you can make money, you can do this. So there's a lot of factors that kids deal with.
I think we questioned maybe sometimes in major college sports, you know, what their attendance was in the classroom in years past.
Yes.
So now give a guy that's going to go to college that you question that $2 million.
Yeah.
I'm just taking a guess out there that maybe they don't go to class.
It all has its benefits, but it all has its downside, too. I think, to your point, though, if you don't have someone like your dad, coach, really instilling it's the game, the rest of it will come, then I think that's a challenging spot for a kid to be in, given everything around him.
Hey, you're watching and listening to Spin is a Four-Letter Word, the Maroon PR podcast. Jen Renahan and I are with Bill Ripken, a good friend, MLB Network star, former Oriole, and we're eating crabs at Jimmy's Famous Seafood. Guys, I'm guessing most people listening to this have been here or have seen that. If you haven't, get down here, experience Jimmy's. It's amazing. What's going on my right?
I'm just putting a little seasoning on there.
What?
But I dare to eat this in front of this camera over here because that's not going to be pretty once I get in there and Fred Flintstone this thing. And for you young people, Fred Flintstone was a Stone Age character.
That's right. And hilarious.
Married to Wilma.
Yes, based on the Honeymooners.
So back to the crab conversation.
Was it?
Wasn't it?
I don't know.
I thought it was really smart of you guys early on with the Ironbirds, minor league baseball team, to build the crab deck and make that a whole experience at the game. Can you talk just a little bit about kind of, going into business ownership before you even got to the MLB Network and your personality side, kind of what you learned through all of that?
When I stopped playing, and by the way, if you want to check out, if the 1998 Detroit Tigers release you halfway through the year, you should probably just take it to the house. That's what happened to me. But I remember sitting home on my deck, and it was midsummer, only 33 years old, but I've been going away since I was 17 years old every year. And I don't remember the last time I sat on my deck, because a 17-year-old didn't have a deck to go sit on. And I remember sitting out there thinking, this might not be the worst thing. Junior called me maybe 3 or 4 days into my deck sitting sabbatical, if you will. And he said, why don't you go down to Tampa when we go down and play the Rays this weekend? We haven't talked about anything yet. Just come down there and we'll figure stuff out. And I get down to Tampa, hang out with him. And by the way, going into a city like Tampa and not having to worry about go play, it's not the worst thing in the world either. But I remember going in there, I sat in his hotel room, and we started talking, and he says, what do you think? We know people. We can start reaching out. And I said, I'm not so sure I want to do it. And he goes, really? And we kind of mapped out, if you will, in a two-day stint in Tampa, hanging around with, because obviously he was playing, he played 162 games every year. But we kind of started talking about Ripken baseball. Senior had the Cal Ripken Senior School out in Emmitsburg. And we kind of threw down a rough blueprint, no napkins needed, because I think if you know both of us, we talk to each other, we remember it. And we set up some sort of rough outline of what we were going to do in that world. When the Ironbirds came into play, I still remember it looked like a construction zone the day before opening day. And I'm going, there is no way this is going to be ready. But whatever happened, happened, and everything was right. But I remember that day as it was almost like it was my first day in the big leagues again. That was kind of the pride factor that came into it. When you worked to get to some point, and it's getting ready to happen. Opening day for the Ironbirds, when we opened it, it almost because I don't think anything's going to replace my first game that I played with when I stand next to Big Bro, you know, during the national anthem.
Yeah.
But this was pretty cool. And I don't know, could we have done all that in 2 days? Maybe the original groundwork, because all that minor league stuff kind of, it snowballed. You know, one thing led to another, then this, then this, then this,
sure.
And it happened. But the Ripken baseball part of it, the amateur side.
Well, you had to build that.
That's kind of the two days down in Tampa, figuring out what we were going to do and how it was going to play out.
And it's amazing. I mean, look, you guys went through a lot with Ripken baseball. You built it. You opened complexes. He found Mike Kenny to run it, which was a really good find, and ultimately sold the big interest in the company to the team that now owns the Sixers and the Washington Commanders and all that. Bill, did you ever imagine as you were building this youth baseball business that one day it would actually turn into something that was this valuable and viable and all that good stuff?
I think the fair answer to that is no. I think we had a good idea, and we put in an honest effort. And I think if you want to go back and get one more quote out of Senior, give me an honest effort, son, and nobody can question you. And it's real. You can still strike out. You can still make an error. But if you're out there working hard every single day, no one can question you. And that's kind of important. And I thought that's what we've done over the years. When we designed the first complex in Aberdeen and we put the fields in, we wanted to make it unique. We wanted to make it special. And that kind of went into, you know, Myrtle Beach. And then we go into Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And now we're in more areas than that. But there's no way in the world, I don't think Junior thought that. I know I didn't. But when you go to one of these complexes and you pull up and you go visit and there's 60 teams out there that are playing, 60 teams in attendance and the amount of kids and what you see, it's kind of cool to step back and it's okay to kind of dig on yourself a little bit in that moment and say, this is pretty damn cool.
Well, I always thought it was super cool for my time there. Every single person that came through those doors at work there worked hard for the Ripken name. Like, that was, like, you guys laid that groundwork of attention to detail, working hard, all the things you've been talking about.
Well, now I'll dig on people like you guys, because what I tell an awful lot of people that we deal with when they say, oh, how'd you do it, or, you know, are you there, and everything else, we've had the good fortune of having really good people. And then our really good people know how to find more good people, yeah, because we have good people that leave. And that's real. The fact of our employees at Ripken Baseball over the years would represent our brand probably better than myself or Junior would. And we are the brand.
Yeah.
Means a lot to us.
Yeah, but that's a product of you guys, right?
That's nice of you, but it's also a product of the people that we've brought in. Because if they didn't want to do it, they wouldn't. But there's something to be said for the group of people that we've had and we have now, that a tournament can go on and somebody asks me, have you been up to Aberdeen? I go, no, not been up there. What happens if something goes wrong? Well, more would go wrong if I was up there than what we have up there. We have really good people. They know how to run it. They know how to deal with the parents. They know how to deal with the coaches. They know how to deal with the kids. And that is the world to us, because that is what the brand is, the Ripken Experience. You bring people in. You give them the fields, and we're a lot behind that. We want to design fields like this. We want to make them so special where if a 12-year-old kid never plays again, at age 13, 14, 15, and on, can he look back at the experience that he had at one of our places?
Right.
And when he looks back at the experience at our place, was that the coolest thing ever? And if he says yes, then we're all good. And part of that is the design and the fields and the synthetic that are all in it, but part of it is the staff that we have in place that runs things right.
I think the coolest thing is that now you see this youth sports is such a big business, massive business. Families and kids are marketed to like nobody's business, right? You have these travel teams. when you guys started this, right? I mean, Dad was doing the Chevy clinics, meeting you on the road. There's that sort of thing. This was born out of a passion to teach, and it was born out of your dad's kind of like passion to teach and pass the game along. Today's businesses are probably a little bit more born out of, wow, this is a viable billion-dollar industry that we should get into. You were on the ground floor there building it out of passion, and now you look up and you see it's big business, marketing to kids and families and travel and all that stuff. I mean, it's been quite an evolution.
Evolution's a good word. One, when we started in Aberdeen, me and Junior both said we have to have all grass fields. We gotta cut the grass. It's gotta smell like grass. We play baseball on grass. And the evolution now is, boy, do we want turf.
Yeah.
Every field we encounter, we're changing over Aberdeen to turf because we want to be able to play. Dad always said, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes you get rained out. We're trying to get rid of those rained outs. And if there's no weather, they can deal with bad calls. You can deal with an umpire missing one because they're going to miss one. If you look at Major League Baseball and they go to the instant replay review, it's about 50% get overturned.
Yeah.
So I try to tell those guys at the tournaments, those are big league umpires.
Yeah.
Is somebody going to miss a call in your tournament to this week? The answer is yes. They're not doing it to you.
Right.
They're doing it because they're human beings and they're going to miss a call. But if you put weather and a missed call into the mix, we got bad stuff going on with that. So, once again, that goes back to our people and our staff. They're the ones that handle that.
Handle all of that.
And treat that well. The evolution of us, John, when we were – because teaching was the first and foremost thing that we were thinking about. And that has kind of morphed more into the tournament world. That's still not to say that we don't love the opportunity to say a word or two when something comes up in a teaching kind of way. But we found that it's easier, one, if Jen's the team mom and I talk to her and she's got control. Next thing you know, I got 12 kids and 3 coaches, and they all travel with 1.5 people because I talked to one person.
Right.
Instead, I got to have 12 coaches and 3 people, and they all travel with 1.5 people. I got to talk to all them to bring one kid in for camp.
Yeah.
It's kind of a hard thing to do right there. So when you do the math and you simplify it, plus these destinations that we have and how they're built and the fields themselves, once the kids come in, they're coming back. Like the 9-year-old team's coming back at 10. They'll find another location maybe to visit of ours when they're 11 and 12 and so on and so forth. And that's just because of the designs and how well these things are done.
Having systems in place is key, right?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Can you almost cookie cut it to a degree? Everything's got its own individuality to it, and everything's going to be different. And certain things need to be treated different. But if you've got a big floor plan out, the master floor plan's out, it's easy to tweak something off of that instead of starting over, you know, one-offs and things like that.
For all businesses. I want to shift gears before we let you go and enjoy the rest of your crabs to more your nonprofit space and the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. For those of you who aren't familiar, the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation is now a national foundation helping underserved kids across the country through programs, through building of youth development parks, which are multi-purpose turf fields, for building of STEM centers now. And the work they're doing is incredibly impactful. They partner with some great organizations and cities. Ripper, when you started the foundation, I was there. And I know it was right on the heels of losing your pops, and you just wanted to honor him. And the goal initially, if I remember right, was to help a few kids in Harford County and honor Dad. Now look at it. I mean, how do you fathom what's happened with your foundation and the impact it's had on over 10 million kids now?
Well, I don't think you can fathom it from our starting point. We got good people, once again,
you do,
that are in charge of the foundation and make sure that that thing runs right. So we lost Pops. We wanted to do something to memorialize him. And I know you guys have both heard me say this before. When the name Ripken is mentioned, the first name that comes to everybody's mind is Cal Jr. And I go, I get it. He's the Iron Man. He's the Hall of Fame. I get all that. But if there wasn't a senior, there would not have been a junior. And I'm not talking biological stuff here. I'm talking the fact that he influenced Junior in a way that that's why the name Ripken is known. I truly believe that. So we wanted to do something to honor Pops, and we decided to set out to raise some money to put Senior's Yard in Aberdeen. And yes, we were looking at the Boys and Girls Club of Aberdeen kind of specifically, you know, because that's where Mom was the president. Dad was very hands-on up there doing things when they were building the new club in Aberdeen, because Dad was a teacher all the time. And he loved being up there, and he loved being around kids, and he loved trying to say something to them to have the light bulb go off. So we said, how are we going to do that? So let's build Senior's Yard, and let's provide a place for these kids to be able to come to, and then we can get them. And so what the foundation has done now, and you mentioned maybe 10 million people being affected, impacted, it's nothing more than that same mentality that we did to begin with that just got multiplied out in different states and around the country in different cities. Building youth development parks now is one of my favorite things, because you put something really nice in an area of need, a synthetic field. It doesn't have to be baseball. It's multi-sport. It can be anything. Put something in that area really, really nice. Make a kid want to go there. Partner with the groups in that area. One of my favorite ones was in Richmond, Virginia. We went down there. I cut the ribbon in Richmond several years ago. I'm driving into this area, and I was feeling a little uneasy. I'm not going to lie. And then it hit me. I go, well, if I feel that way, how do you think these kids feel every day? So we partner with the Boys and Girls Club down in Richmond that already have everything in their crawl, to help these kids. They want to do it. They're the right people. Yes. Some of the kids are coming in. When I got there to the club, I see where the field is. I pull down into the field. I get out. I go towards the field. There's about 100 cops, all the kids of the Boys and Girls Clubs are there, the staff of the Boys and Girls Clubs there, and I went, we did it, because we have a program called Badges for Baseball, and these guys are trained by our staff to get a little bit of baseball knowledge, but they're more about just showing up every day at these places and being a mentor to these kids. Now the kids leave school, instead of going that way to do something wrong, they go that way, and they go to the Boys and Girls Club. They go to our field, our youth development park, and they get to hang out with a cop who's the good guy, not the bad guy. And I'm still on that wagon. They're the good guys. And we have to put them in the situation where they can be successful and helpful. We've had so many kids, And I don't know the number on it, but it's multiple kids, so many, that have actually chosen, when they've gone through our program at that place, have now become cops themselves.
Just in Harford County.
Right.
We saw that at your gala this year, a remarkable story about.
So I'm saying this. You can talk about 10 million?
Yeah.
I say of one.
Yeah.
I say if one kid went through that program and realized what's going on, and then they do the right thing. Right. And then they continue to do the right thing. Then the snowball effect happens. 10 million is great. Yeah. But I like to think about, you know, it's those individuals that we hit. And quite a few have been through that program and have become law enforcement themselves.
It's cool. Like, one thing I know, the people that run your foundation at the highest level, Steve Salem and Carrie Lebo, they always say, like, because I know you went for a while during COVID, you shifted gears and helped Feeding America, the Maryland Food Bank. Now, then you went to STEM because you saw a need. And Carrie said it really succinctly to me. She said, you know, we've come to the point where we fill gaps. We see a gap and that kids aren't being served in a certain way, and we're trying to fill that. I think it's so gratifying. I'm sure your dad's looking down, just smiling ear to ear and can't believe it.
Well, I think we've been asked before, what would he think about this one? He'd say, you guys are nuts. My mom would probably share in that same thing and say, you guys are getting too big for your britches. And it might be true, Mom. Me and Junior are both getting bigger daily since we stopped playing. But I still think it's that same small town type mentality. And I always said this about Dad, and it's no disrespect for Dad. Dad was always, if I can touch it and feel it, I can fix it.
Right.
And just because we're out there nationally now doesn't take away from that thing. We've partnered with like people in all these different areas that want to touch it, feel it, and fix it. And if you do that 100 times or 150 times in different areas, now that's when the numbers grow, but it's still that same first type thing. You know, touch it, feel it, fix it, and we can go from there.
And the relationships you build, that's all goes back to while we're sitting here talking about having
it doesn't
and crowds. Of, you mentioned it's Boys and Girls Clubs, right? You've started that partnership probably locally, you know, and even one of your past people, Jeff Breslin's now running Boys and Girls Clubs in Maryland, and now they're a national partner. And, like, you guys have been very good about partnering with people, not thinking you can solve it all on your own. I think that's admirable.
I'll quote Junior here and leave Senior out of this one. He goes, you can do a lot by yourself, but if you find like-minded people that want to do the same stuff, you just multiply that out. You know, yes, you can do it by yourself. Junior could do things by himself, but he also knows there's limitations to him.
Yep.
And the more you partner with and the right people you partner with, then you can just grow beyond belief, if you will.
Yeah, that's great. Bill, last thing for me, and I'll let Jen chime in, and then we'll get back and finish these crabs off here. Jimmy's Famous Seafood. Thank you again to John and Tony Minidakis. What's next for you? I mean, where do you want to see this go? Whether it's, you know, the business, I know you guys still have a foot in the business, although it's generally there. You got the foundation ongoing. You got your broadcasting. You got your family. Like, what is next for Bill Ripken?
Is there a time to say, take it to the house?
Yeah, there is.
I think that there's some sort of
exit strategy.
I would say light at the end of my tunnel type thing that you're looking at. Back to the deck and do something there.
Yes, back to the deck.
I mean, I always want to do something. I don't want to be out of the game of baseball. And I think with, as you mentioned, we still have a foothold in Ripken Baseball. And if you look around the country at our tournament complexes, it still operates as the Ripken Experience because that's what they wanted.
Yeah.
And I think rightfully so on the new ownership's part. But being able to go and attend tournaments on opening ceremonies, having the go-between with the coaches, my favorite thing to do right now, it's not the network. It's going to the tournament destinations and having that meet and greet with 150, 200, and 250 coaches and saying, boys, I'm opening it up to you guys. I'll give you a little bit of wax poetic for a couple minutes, and I'm opening it up to you. I'm going to be good. I'm going to be great if you guys are good. You help me. You lead me in a way.
That's cool.
And I love talking about the game, and I love trying to enlighten them because, like Dad always did, if Dad could give you a nugget to make you a little bit better, that's what his job as a coach was. My job is as the I guess as the coach or as the ambassador going to these tournaments, talking to coaches, can I give them a nugget or two? I'm going to give them 30. If one or two sticks with them and one or two helps them and one or two of them that help them make the kid better, then I win.
I always thought your coaching clinics were the best program you guys had.
They were pretty fun.
Yeah. But just to your point.
With Johnny High Sox? With Tim Gebhardt?
Yeah.
Johnny High Sox?
Still floats your boat, which I think is cool.
How about books? Any more books?
Any more books in the offing?
You know, I think I wrote a couple with Cal and then wrote the one.
Yep.
And those are the only three books I've ever read. so I'm going to say that probably not a book on there. I did that one out of the love for the sport and just saying I needed to put something down because it was bugging me.
You got to get a Bill Ripken podcast going. That's what I think. That's what the world demands and needs after the broadcast. Oh,
they probably need it. Don't think they're going to get it.
Hey, listen, Bill Ripken, major leaguer, broadcaster, philanthropist, businessman.
Author.
Bill, and somebody that I'm honored to call my friend. I'm so thrilled that you were with us today at Jimmy's. Thank you, Bill. Really appreciate it. That was
Cheers.
Spin is a four-letter word. The Maroon PR Podcast. Have a beer with Bill Ripken. See you next time. I'm empty. Thanks for listening to Spin is a four-letter word. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe. Send us your feedback, too. We want this to be interesting for everybody. And give us a follow at Maroon PR on Twitter and LinkedIn.